the survey, and some of you wanted some more explanations about naturalness, and in particular to have an extra tutorial on that. So there is going to be one tutorial. It will be optional with the solutions, where you are going to work out the fermion self-energy and indeed realize, well, obtain that the mass of the fermion is proportional to the fermion mass log of lambda. And then in the tutorial, you are going to see that even if you set this to M Planck, then the corrections to the fermion mass from loops are very small. That's one of the things. There was a comment of somebody wanted to learn or if I understood correctly from what this person wrote, he or she was interested in superluminal neutrinos. I hope I understood correctly. So now in the wiki, there is some link to what I think is a very nice discussion on superluminal neutrinos, and why personally I don't care, when this person doesn't care either, but at least he is Professor Strassler. He's discussing the experimental situation for the OPERA. And also now in the wiki there are posted the Feynman rules for SUSY. Erratum, yes. No kidding. Okay. Well. Oh, cool. So there are two links. One of them says erratum. This contains all the Feynman rules, correct. Wow, this guy is really this Rorschach. I mean, no, I don't want you to read this paper, but for you, it's a reference. Whenever you really want to know exactly what is in front of the coupling, you have it. That's the standard reference. And I really like to have these surveys, because then you can read me comments. The problem is that I get the surveys days after you send them. So another thing you can do is to tell them to the tutors or send me an email. That will be much faster. And then I can address your comments, you know, on the spot. Okay. Yesterday, I realized that I was probably going too fast trying to obtain the mass spectrum for supersymmetry. So I decided to slow down. We are going to go a bit slower, meaning that today we will spend the day doing this, plus maybe talking about dark matter. And on Monday, we will talk about supersymmetry breaking, which is okay. So I'm going to just describe the different sectors of the MSSM and the mass matrix for these guys. And then I'm going to take the what I think is the technically harder example, which is the charged fermionic sector. And we are going to do it very slowly. The other sectors, the scalar sectors, are simpler. So we are going to do the most difficult one, and I assume that you will be able to do the simpler ones. So let's talk about the Higgs scalar Higgs sector. So let me repeat. I'm going to describe all the sectors, but I'm going to do in detail what is called the Charcino sector. The scalar Higgs sector, well, as we were discussing yesterday, we need two Higgses. This Higgs doublet, or the what we call up, because it's the guy that is going to get a wave and give masses to the up type quarks. So the top, the electron, and so on, is given by this. And the H down sector is given explicitly by this. And this has hypercharge 1. This has hypercharge minus 1. We wanted that. We needed one reason why we needed a two Higgs doublet model in supersymmetry is precisely because besides these scalars, we will have the fermionic partners, and they may introduce anomalies. Anomalies destroy the renormalizability of a theory most of the time. So we don't want global anomalies. And then if we introduce fermionic degrees of freedom, we have to make sure to cancel all anomalies. That's one reason to have two Higgs doublet model, two Higgs doublet model in the MSSM. Okay, so now what we are going to do, so this guy gives masses to the up, the charm, the top, and the top, sorry. And this guy is coupling to the D, S, and B quarks, and also to all the leptons. So we are going to start counting degrees of freedom. How many degrees of freedom we have here? So how many degrees of freedom you have in one SU2 doublet? It's two complex scalars. So each of these guys is 4 degrees of freedom and another 4. So it's 4 because you have 2 complex scalars per doublet, and then you have 2 doublets, and the number of doublets, that gives you 8 degrees of freedom. Okay. But you know that from these 8 degrees of freedom, we need 3 of them to be eaten by the W's and the Z's, right? So what we are going to do is 8 of them, we are going to take 3 of them, which will be eaten by W plus minus and the Z to provide longitudinal polarizations. And at the end, we are going to have 5 physical degrees of freedom. Okay. So now let's also look at these degrees of freedom in terms of charged or non-charged. So from these 5 degrees of freedom, 3 are going to be neutral and 2 are going to be charged. Okay. You tell me if I'm going too fast or you want some clarification. All right, so let me see. Also, we know that we want both the H-up to get a bed and the H-down to get a bed, because they had to get a bed and give masses to the quarks and leptons. And we are going to define tangent beta. Beta is the angle between these two. So it's going to be Vu over Vd. What's the definition of the angle beta? So we are saying we have 3 charge, 3 neutral and 2 charge. Let me go back here. Sorry, going back and forth. The 3 neutral, we are going to call them DH naught, capital H, and A naught. This is going to be what you will call the standard model Higgs. This is going to be another Higgs, but a bit heavier. So a heavier Higgs. And this guy has interesting properties and is called a pseudo scalar. And the two charged are going to be called H plus and minus, the charge Higgs. Okay. Yes?
How could we see that we should have three neutral and two charged?
Yes. So in this case, it's just counting, right? I start with four guys, two of them neutral, two charged. Right? So two neutral, two charged, and I have two doublets. And from this, I had to eat three of them, but I eat two charged and one neutral. So at the end of the day, I have five physical degrees of freedom in the spectrum, not eaten. And but I have eaten one more, like, this is one neutral degree of freedom, this is two charged. Degree of freedom, so I'm going to have one more neutral than that. In this case, it's nice to just think on theories just looking at the number of degrees of freedom, because then you do the math and you must get what you started with, right? Degrees of freedom do not disappear. So you, in advance, you can already say that you are going to have three neutrals. Probably one of them will be lighter than the other, and as it happens, there is a pseudoscalar. And then the two charge must be plus minus. So you already know a lot about the theory by just looking at the number of degrees of freedom. Okay. So looking at, I'm just going to talk about the neutral sector. And we are going to define this H up, H down to be V up, V down. So remember, because these guys are getting a VEF, to expand around the physical vacuum, I have to add this shift here. And the rest are propagating degrees of freedom. And I'm going to get something that is a matrix of rotations of my H0. So by R of an angle theta, what I mean is just a matrix of this time. Cosinus of theta, sinus of theta, minus sinus of theta, cosinus of theta. Just a rotation in two-dimensional space, in this case of angle alpha. Plus I over square root of 2 and rotation of angle beta, where beta is this beta here, of G0, A0. So I've taken the neutral sector of my two Higgs doublet model, and I've written explicitly the fact that they get a VEF, and I written down a real scalars, and here the pseudo scalar part. And each of these guys has a component of this H naught and H, the little h and the capital H. And if you look, for example, at the up sector, the component of a little h is given by this angle. Okay, so alpha is giving me how much of an admixture of the standard model like Higgs and the heavy Higgs is, for example, my H up or my H down. Is it clear, this? Yes, good. Yes. I was going to get there. Yes, good. So I'm just saying that I'm writing formally this thing by writing what are the real degrees of freedom, the real scalars, and the pseudo scalar part. What is G0? G0 is explicitly the would be Gorston boson. It's the guy that once you add gauge interactions to H up and H down is going to be eaten by the Z. So it's going to be the longitudinal polarization of the Z. So it won't stay in the spectrum. Yes. Yes. So, what is V up and V down at the end of the day, right? What is going to be is the way the Higgs type up or down couples to these quarks. The only thing you know is that at the end of the day, when it couples to the Z and the W, it has to do it with this kind of relation. That the contributions of the up and down has to sum up to give the electroweak scale. So as it happens, beta also appears here as a mixing, or if you want, as how much of the up and down is given to the Z as a longitudinal polarization. Alpha is yet another angle that tells you how much of an admixture your light Higgs and your heavy Higgs is of the original up and down Higgs. Okay, the charge sector is simpler. Yes. Sorry. It's an angle. No, it is not defined in terms of. Sorry. It is a more complicated expression. I don't know if you want to hear it. Let me see if I have it. But is the reason why I'm not writing the expression explicitly is because it doesn't have a nice meaning in terms of just the V up over V down. It has to do with the mixing, simply the mixing of H up or H down in terms of the physical eigenstates. So it's not so illuminating. That's the case of the beta. I have here the expression, but it's not very illuminated. I can write the expression, it's not going to help you a lot, but I can do that. So tangent of 2 alpha is given by tangent of 2 beta multiplied by the mass of the pseudoscalar, mass of the Z, divided by the difference in masses. So as I said, it's not that illuminating. Good. So now about the charge sector. We had a similar expression. So we are going to say that our H up and H down minus complex conjugate, this guy is going to be a rotation with the angle beta, and then G plus and H plus. And then you get the same expression with a minus everywhere. So the same thing, G plus and minus, and now there will be Gorston bosons and will provide polarizations to the W plus minus. Okay, so that's the Higgs sector. Meaning that that's the Higgs sector in terms of just number of degrees of freedom. I haven't told you how the mass matrix looks. Okay. The other sector of the MSSM is the Keijino plus Higgsino sectors. So those are fermionic sectors. And we had to talk about Keijinos and Higgsinos together because they mix with each other. Yes. No, unless there is a parity violation. It doesn't. It is true that the quarks are able to give a contribution to the Higgs potential. And in fact, in supersymmetry, what you do is use this kind of mixing, the fact that the, for example, the Higgs can have a stop coupling that will induce some correction to the one loop potential. And then you can look for radiative breaking of electroweak symmetry. So asking for the stops to force the Higgs to get a vacuum expectation value. So yeah, there is this kind of thing. But what is a mass mixing? A mass mixing is something of this kind. It's at the level of having this kind of vertex. Whereas this is an interaction, so it's different. An interaction can produce a shift in the physical mass because of this, because of loops, but it is nothing that you had to address at tree level, whereas this tree level mixing is something you had to address. More questions? Yes?
What is the subscript L in W plus minus?
Longitudinal.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, very good. Ask me this kind of question. Longitudinal. Okay, so let's go to the Keijino and Higgsino sectors. Now we have Keijinos corresponding to the SU3 cross SU2 cross U1 interactions in the standard model. So we get gluinos, we get winos, xenos, and photinos. And each of these guys have a mass of mi, lambda I, and then we can put an index here, where I is 1, 2, or 3, means that m1 is the mass you give to the bino here. m2 is the mass you are going to give to the winos, minus 1, 2, and 3. It's the same mass. And M3 is the mass that you're going to give to the gluinos. Okay. And now, besides the Keijinos, we have these Higgsinos. And if you look here, is H up and H down, and we are going to have exactly the same, but in terms of fermions. So we are going to get H up neutral, same for down, and then we will have an H up positive, a positively charged Higgsino, and negatively charged Higgsino of the down type. Yes. Yes. Exactly, so A is the index in the adjoint of whatever the group we are talking about. The same way that the gluons or the W's or the B's are in the adjoint representation. That's exactly the same. So the adjoint goes to from 1, 2, n squared minus 1. Okay, so we have the Higgsinos. So at the end of the day, there are going to be mass mixings among all these guys. And those mass mixings are going to involve things that are either neutral or positively charged or negatively charged. So we are going to separate the Keijino Higgsinos into two sectors. The neutral Yes.
So are we talking about supercritic mechanism or thick mechanism?
So in for the scalar sector, we are going to have the usual Higgs mechanism scalar, but now with a two Higgs doublet model. Later on Monday, hopefully, when we talk about SUSY breaking, we will talk about the super Higgs mechanism, meaning that we will break supersymmetry spontaneously, and this Goldstone boson will be eaten by the gravitino. But that's.
But then now, because of the normal Higgs, normal
So you're asking if electroweak symmetry breaking induces supersymmetry breaking, right? And then the question is, imagine that we have a supersymmetric situation where the Higgses and Higgsinos have exactly the same mass. And remember that the Higgs type up and down are exactly they are in each of them in a Carrot supermultiplet, a different Carrot supermultiplet. So what you are asking is, do I get, once I said like, for example, this guy is different from zero, does it imply that supersymmetry is broken? And the answer is yes, because this guy is charged under supersymmetry. But the point is that we need supersymmetry to be broken at a higher energy. That's a very interesting, well, I think it's a very interesting question, because let's even talk about, instead of SUSY breaking, let's talk about electroweak symmetry breaking. We talk about the Higgs mechanism as a way of breaking electroweak symmetry. But before that, at very low energies, chiral symmetry breaking also induces electroweak symmetry breaking. Why? Because the UU bar, DD bar condensates are charged under SU2, so they do break electroweak symmetry. So you may be asking, okay, it means that when once I break chiral symmetry, at low energies, pions appear, kaons appear, these guys are going to give masses to the Ws and Zs. They do. So MZ and W get contributions with even with a no Higgs mechanism that goes as lambda QCD. They do. It's just that this scale is like 1,000 times lower than what we want. Same here. Yeah. So if I break electroweak symmetry, I also break supersymmetry, but is that enough? No. Same question. Okay. What did I do with that paper? Ah, yes. Okay, so now Gaichinos and Higgsinos, fermions of different charges mixed with each other. We are going to break down this mixing between neutral and charge sector. So the neutral sector is going to be called the neutralino sector. And the neutralinos are denoted as a chi guy with a zero and a tilde. And so let's write explicitly these guys. How many neutral guys we have here? Well, so electrically neutral. So we are going to have a zino, a photino. Who else? We are going to get an H up 0 and an H down 0, right? Those are the guys that after electroweak symmetry breaking are going to mix with each other. So when I want to obtain the physical eigenstates, I have to go from this interaction eigenstates to solve the mass matrix of mixing, so these guys, and then I will obtain 4 neutralinos. The gluinos are neutral as well, but what happens is that they don't mix with the electroweak states. They just have color. So indeed, in the neutral sector, there is also the gluino, but he's a guy on his own. So the neutralino sector is for four mass agensates that will be admixtures of the interaction agensates. So you denote this neutralino as chi tilde naught, and then you put a subscript 1, 2, 3, and 4, where 1 is the lightest, 2 the heaviest. And all these guys are going to be linear combinations of this Zeno, Cotino, HAP. Well, actually, that's after electroweak symmetry breaking, but even before electroweak symmetry breaking, instead of the Zeno and the Fotino, you will write the Bino, the Wino 3 component, and again the HAP and the H now. Okay. So those are the neutralinos. To go from this, or you want from this basis of interaction to the basis of physical eigenstates, you need to diagonalize a mass matrix. And this mass matrix happened to be a Hermitian, so you can do your usual diagonalization. And the way it looks like, in a basis of Bino, Wino, Higgsino, let me make sure, down 0, and Higgsino up 0, the mass matrix looks like M1, M2, and a 0 and a 0 here. It's just telling you that you have a component that is M1, Bino, Bino, M2, Wino 3, Wino 3. And then the Higgsinos, the neutral Higgsinos, do get masses through this famous mu term. So the H down and H up do get masses that mix with each other. And then after a lot of symmetric breaking, we will get mixings between the Binos and Winos and the Higgsinos, as we were discussing yesterday. So here we are going to have entries that are proportional to electroweak symmetry breaking. Sorry. And all these electroweak symmetry breaking terms are proportional to some coupling G or G prime times the BEV. So in principle, these off-diagonal terms are suppressed respect to the guys that come from SUSY breaking. So that happens to be a matrix that you can diagonalize in the usual way. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to talk about the Charchino sector and do it in detail because the diagonalization is kind of tricky. Okay. Any questions? I don't even remember the first time I learned supersymmetry, but you may be thinking, boy, this new theory is very complicated. You can also think that this new theory is very rich. That's the way you can take it. It is a rich theory, and if it happens to be what nature chose, well, it's going to be lots of fun to solve it. Yes. Exactly. We cannot allow that because already the constraints coming from LEP are telling you that it has to be bigger. And now this is the year of we know the constraints from NSC are, well, much heavier than that. Well, as you will see in your homework. Yes. Then. Okay. So that's a good question. What Eleni is saying is that usually the common law scenario for dark matter is to say that the lightest supersymmetric particle for the LSP, which we know is going to be stable because our parity and all this, is going to be the lightest neutralino. This is by no means a general result. This is what you get in most of the parameter space of theories like minimal supergravity. But in theories like gauge mediation supersymmetry breaking, so the LSP is the gravity, no? In a gauge mediation supersymmetry breaking most of the time. And in some theories like anomaly mediation, often the lightest supersymmetric particle is the DS neutrino. That's for anomaly mediation supersymmetry breaking. So this common law is just it is an inheritance for having studied supersymmetry during 30 years, mostly focusing on M-Sugar. It's just a tradition. But now that we know that M-Sugar is dead, we don't care. That's even greater. So in your homework, by the way, in your homework, the first question asks you to look into some experimental study from Atlas, and it tells you to look at an exclusion plot for gluino and squarks. And I want you to read this plot and explain to me what it means. Essentially that SUSY is in bad state. But besides this plot, there is another plot that shows something called M0 and M1/2. This is some stuff left from the fact that the experimentalists are always, we're always looking at M-Sugar. M-Sugar is a particular type of breaking of supersymmetry with very few parameters, and two of these parameters are M0 and M1/2. M0 is roughly the mass of the scalars, the SUSY scalars. M1/2 is roughly the mass of the SUSY gauginos. And if you see the bounds there are even stronger than in the case of a simple model of gluino squark. For many reasons, for direct constraints, from WMAP data or dark matter, for many reasons and many years ago, we already know that M-Sugar is kind of like big question mark. And because of that, then the experimentalists are starting to move from this kind of plots that are completely useless for theories to this kind of plots that are extremely useful. So that's why I wanted you to have a look at this paper, because this is the old way of doing things. This is the new way of doing things. So you are going to see that most experimental papers nowadays for supersymmetry use this kind of what is called simplified models. Which, by the way, simplified models is something that your instructors in standard model, Natalia and Philip, were big proponents and, you know, the big people behind this kind of treatment of data. So if you have any questions, they are the guys to ask. So, okay. Is it clear now? So neutralinos, mass matrix is simple. You know how to diagonalize matrices. I am no doubt about that. So what is not so simple is to do a diagonalization for the Charcino sector. So let's do the Charcino sector. So let's do this one in detail. The charge sector is called the sector of Charcinos. And these guys are going to be called chi tilde plus minus, and there are going to be two of them. What you're going to do is start with some your mass matrix for the charge sector. is going to have only, it's a 2x2 matrix that contains M2, then a mu here, electroweak part, which is the square root of MW sine also beta, and the square root of MW cosine of beta. So this mass matrix is not Hermitian, and we had to do something better. So what are these entries? This is writing something that goes from a plus guy to a minus guy, a positively charged guy to a negatively charged guy. So it's something that is going to involve these guys, and also the window plus and minus. So this guy is the window plus, and here is the window minus. They are entering the entry of window plus, window minus. Let me make sure I get this right. This is the H down, no, up, sorry, terrible with convention, up, whereas this guy is the H down minus XC. Okay. Because this guy is not a Hermitian, then what you have to do is the following. I'm going to go from these eigenstates that contain window plus minus, H up, down, plus minus, to my Charchinos plus minus 1 and 2. And the way the diagonalization works is that at the end, my Charchino plus guy, I had two of them, is going to be some mass, some matrix with 2x2 entries, of my original vector of plus fields J, where phi plus is just Vino plus, and then Hixino up. And now my negatively charged Charchino is also going to be 2x2. The matrix that is going to tell me how the flavor eigenstates translate into mass eigenstates is going to be different. And that's the whole difficulty of this. But it's not difficult. It's something you have to see at least once, and then you are used to it. It will be a different one. Let's call U of a phi minus J. And now V and U are unitary 2x2 matrices. Okay. So we have the mass matrix. We want to obtain how to translate between the flavor to the mass eigenstates. And we also want to obtain what are the eigenvalues, right? So what we do is the following. We're going to say that now my mass matrix, original mass matrix, is going to be diagonalized by a combination of U and V minus 1. And that will lead to the diagonal mass matrix. And the question is, how do we get U and V? For that, you have to note that you do M and diagonal dagger and diagonal, then you get V M charge dagger same charge,
V to the minus 1.
All right. So what this means, so this is diagonal. This is diagonal. When you multiply, you get a diagonal thing. So what it means is that V is the unitary transformation that brings this mass matrix, in this case, it's the product of two mass matrices, into a diagonal form. Now this guy is going to be Hermitian. These transformations are unitary. So this is the usual diagonalization. So you will diagonalize this guy as usual. Now if I do M diagonal, M diagonal there, that's the way to obtain U. So I get U complex conjugate MC, MC dagger, U complex conjugate minus 1. So what do you do? You take your mass matrix and form two combinations, MM dagger, M dagger M, and diagonalize both of them, obtain the eigenvectors, and you form the V and U matrices. You go back to your original mass matrix, multiply by U and V in this particular way, and then you will get the eigenvalues. Have you seen this kind of thing before? No. Okay. Okay. So, usually what you will do is to take this mass matrix, put it in Mathematica, for example, and do the whole thing. But there is one thing that you have to take into account, is, and I don't know why is the case, but when you take, ask in Mathematica to tell you the eigenvectors, it gives you the eigenvectors, but they are not normalized. And why is this important? Okay, so let's go back here. I go to my program. I want to obtain this Vij, but the Mathematica, or I don't know if Maple does the same, I just use Mathematica, doesn't give you normalized eigenvectors. This is important for something called canonical normalization. So they are non-unitary. And this is bad because we want to take the Charchino, let's say Charchino plus 1, looking at this expression here, is going to be V11 of the fermion plus 1 plus V12 fermion plus 2. Now, what we are doing is rotating from the flavor bases, in this case of winos and hexenos, to a mass eigenstate. But imagine I go and I start with some theory of, let's say, a fermion, opa, with the corresponding number in front, and then some mass term of this type. Right? I've read my theory like this. And then I decide to do a rotation that is non-unitary. What is going to happen is that now, by new, you want my new kinetic terms, okay, plus, yes, bar, chi plus, are not going to have the correct number in front. All right? Are you getting lost with all this technical stuff? It's just a word of caution, because if you really want to do, if you ever work in supersymmetry and you try to obtain the rotation between the flavor and the mass eigenstates, and you do it stupidly, you want using Mathematica or whatever other program, you're going to end up with this kind of problem. You have to make sure that V11 squared plus V12 squared sum to 1 Otherwise, you are going to change the normalization of the kinetic terms, and you want your kinetic terms to be canonically normalized. Why do you want that? It's because at the end of the day, you want to take this theory, whichever theory you are using, and not think about the kinetic terms. You just want to use the Feynman rules with the usual propagator, mass of whatever chi squared. And the relation between the P and the mass is related to whatever number is in front of the kinetic term and the mass here. So you decide to do a rotation where this condition is not satisfied, you won't be able to use your Feynman rules as usual. Your states won't be unitary. So you need to what is called canonically normalize your field. Yes. Exactly, yes. And that's precisely the reason, because I start with a B and W3 states, I end up with a Z and the photon, and I had to make sure that the guys have the same kinetic term. Otherwise, I couldn't put here P squared minus mass of the Z squared. That's very important. So here is going to be the same, just a word of advice. Okay. So you can diagonalize this mass matrix in any limit you want. You can, because it's a simple mass matrix, you can also do it at a brute force. And you will get a super long eigenstates and eigenvectors. But there are limits we can take that are useful. For example, right now, we know that M2 and mu are probably much bigger than all the electroweak symmetry breaking entries, right? Because of that, we can obtain the eigenvalues and then expand. And then we do that, we are going to get that the mass of the Charchino 1 and 2 are going to be roughly M2 and mu. Actually, this guy, if mu happens to be bigger than M2, then you can see that this Charchino 1 and 2 are actually M2 minus something that goes as M2 GV, well, MW divided by mu. So with a number here, obviously. Whereas the other eigenstate, the heavier eigenstate, is going to be mu plus some number, mu times nw. Actually, just plus nw. This is just saying that we have in this mass matrix two sources of three sources of masses, right? Electroweak symmetry breaking, things that are Giacchino masses and associated with Susi breaking, and the mu term, which has, should I write it somewhere else? Yeah, I can do it here. Chi 1 and 2, sorry, plus minus. In this limit, where mu is bigger than M2, the lightest eigenstate will be M2 minus M2 NW, so electroweak suppressed divided by mu, with a number in front, which I don't care. And the other eigenstate will be mu, and then a plus of some number, just electroweak. Is that any better? Okay. So in this Charchino mass matrix, there are three sources of masses: electroweak symmetry breaking, Susi breaking, and Susi preserving. So in principle, these guys can be as separated as you want. So it is because of constraints, From colliders, we already know that these guys are bigger than the electrobeam contribution, probably. Because of the fact that the mu doesn't break supersymmetry, you have some guesswork that probably mu is bigger than the Giugino masses. And then you get two eigenstates, the Giugino. One of them is mostly, in this case, Wino. One of them is mostly Higgsino. So the lightest Giugino is going to be mostly Wino. And the heaviest is going to be mostly, sorry, Higgsino. So if there is any separation in the scales in your mass matrix, at the end, the physics is simple. You are going to have a guy that is mostly of a type, and the other have a guy that is mostly of the other type. So it's either one is Wino or the other is Higgsino. And what it means is that when you write down, do this. So when you write down the mass eigenstates, the chi plus minus one, as a linear combination of the interaction eigenstates, this guy is going to be mostly a Wino plus minus type of field, plus, in this case, minus, some combination of the Higgsino, but this combination is going to be suppressed by some M2 and W over mu, with again a number in front. That's what I mean by mostly Wino. Whereas the heavier eigenstate is going to be mostly Higgsino, and in this case plus some number that goes as MW and then Wino. Right? Okay. So you can write the same for squares, for leptons. You will obtain a mass matrix. You are going to do in the homework a simple case for the squarks. So you will get used to diagonalize this guy. But it's always the Giugino, the guys that are a little bit more complicated. In the last few minutes, we are going to talk about dark matter and gauge unification, because we haven't even described all the sectors of the MSSM. I told you we had the scalar Higgs sector, the Giugino neutralino sectors. You will have the quark and the lepton sectors, each of them with their own complications, bunch of rich phenomenology, but it seems like a lot of work to, at the end of the day, what is SUSY giving us? Is saving the day for the Higgs? Is it worth all this? Well, the question is that as a bonus, SUSY may save the day for the Higgs and give dark matter and also gauge coupling unification. Because you did the tutorial yesterday, you already know why the MSSM is doing better than the standard model in terms of gauge coupling unification. So the idea of gauge coupling is that we see these three interactions of electrobeam plus stone interactions. And so the forces in nature seems to be a product of gauge groups. And wouldn't it be nice if instead of having three forces with three completely different coupling constants and phenomenology, all these guys are high energies unified into one single force, one single description of all the things that happen in the standard model? Or in other words, wouldn't it be nice if those three groups enter into a bigger group, like of symmetries, like SO10
or SU5.
And in the same way as SU2 cross
U1 break down spontaneously to U1 electromagnetism,
we can imagine that at high energies there is this big symmetry SO10 or SU5, and at some point, because of dynamics, it breaks down to these product of groups. So what we think and perceive as being completely different interactions are actually coming from the same force. So this guy will have a coupling constant, and this guy will have only one coupling constant. The promise. And then the way you represent that is to say, oh, if I look at the evolution of coupling constants with some scale, mu, and I write here something like this, where this is 1 over alpha 1. So that's the coupling constant for U1. That's 1 over alpha 2 and 1 over alpha 3. For the three groups, at some scale, they unify. And from now on, they start running as the same coupling constant. Yes? At some point, that's a very good question. The only thing you see is that at some point they unify, they have the same value. And if then you assume that there is nothing from here to the Planck scale, then there are no new threshold corrections, and then the couplings are going to run exactly the same. So that's assuming a desert. Yes. So in your homework and tutorial, sorry, you saw that this is a thing of order of 10 to the 15 GeVs. So it's close to the Planck scale. Yes.
What physical effect makes them,
So I think this is imposing it right now. Because if you do it naively, yeah, don't say anything about
the unifying group, yes. So what you have to assume is that after the GATT scale, as you go to higher energies, there is nothing except either SO10 or SU5 complete representations. Then you make sure that everything follows the same. Yes.
Is this unification
generated? Good question. So 30 years ago, 20 years ago, when this was proposed at the beginning, it seemed like both SO10 and SU5 were the simplest options containing these groups. And it seemed that in both cases, you had to choose your matter representations in a smart way so that this unification happens. But in both cases, it was possible. Now, in practice, SO10 unification is dead. SU5 unification is zombie-like. Really. So in my opinion, the problem with this grand unified, sorry, let me just say that. This scale is called the GATT scale of the grand, just the name is telling you something, unified theory scale. Beautiful promise of unifying the strength, the forces in nature. But even at such high scales, what happens in this SO10 or SU5 in this unification is that also leptons and quarks, guys with baryon number and lepton number, end up in the same multiplets. Oh boy. Whenever you put a quark with a lepton and they can transform under each other, you are going to produce proton decay. Because the proton, the only reason why it doesn't decay to electrons is because of baryon number. Electron, two positrons, or baryon number. So if baryon number is violated, and this is violating baryon number, putting a lepton and a quark in the same multiplet is already a violation of baryon number. Then you are going to screw up with proton decay. Proton decay is being searched And so we can discuss at length about the searches that are going on right now. They are searching the same places as you search for neutrinos. Why? Because proton decay is a rare event. You need very low backgrounds, as in the case of the neutrinos. So they look for proton decay. They haven't seen anything. And then they impose a upper bound on the lifetime of the proton. So the lifetime of the proton has to be bigger than something, a number of years. And this upper bound is essentially killing SO10 for sure and putting SU5 in a very contrived situation. So SO10 in all variations you can think about, dead. SU5 in the simplest version, dead. In most of the other versions you can think about, is also dead, but there's one version that is still surviving. So something you can do to SU5 to still avoid proton decay lifetime. Yes. Sorry. Yes, that's the guy. I mean, it could be that this is a theory of nature. What do we know? But so if I were giving this talk 10 years ago, I would tell you, great, one of the reasons to do SUSY, gauge unification. Right now, I don't know what to tell you. Plus, this gauge unification is very good at one loop. But when you look at two loops, it doesn't look so good anymore. Sorry to be so negative, but this is the understanding we have now, and I have to give you the understanding. What about dark matter? And I'm going to be negative again. Dark matter, again, the Wien miracle can be realized in supersymmetry. We have a stable, weakly interacting particle. It could be your LSP. Neutralino. So now, dark matter could be your neutralino, but now your neutralino, the lightest neutralino, could be either, it's a linear combination of a Higgsino, Wino 3, and Bino, right? Higgsino up and down. So you can say that your LSP is a linear combination of Higgsinotype, Winotype, and Binotype. So dark matter as a neutralino is in trouble for a very simple reason. You had to do two things at the same time. You had to explain the dark matter abundance in the universe, omega dark matter. But also you had to avoid direct constraints. Direct constraints. To explain dark matter abundance, you had to make sure of not over abundance the universe. Because the usual story is that if dark matter interacts very, very weakly with the standard model, in the early universe, it's very difficult to get rid of. So processes such as dark matter, standard model, had to be kind of active. You need to have this coupling kind of big to avoid overabundance. That is a danger. Abundance, sorry. But if you take this diagram and flip it like this, you are saying that dark matter interacts with the standard model nowadays in a way that is kind of sizable. So at the end of the day, you always end up with some tension, and this tension has become worse and worse as we get more data from direct detection, between not producing too much dark matter to make this coupling strong enough or efficient enough as to destroy dark matter, so because these are going to be the processes, but not be visible at the direct detection experiments, which are getting very sensitive. So that's leading to a tight situation for that matter in the MSSM. That was phrased some time ago as saying that the neutralino has to be well tempered. You need a very specific set of parameters here, of a very specific combination of these three guys, to make sure that you, at the same time, destroy enough dark matter in the early universe and do not produce too much of this stuff now in the direct detection experiments. So you had to attune things in a particular way. It's a new tuning of the MSSM. It's a well-tempered neutralino. So sorry to be negative, but you know, as we get more data, our theories are getting more constrained. And I guess this is a healthy thing, but it's kind of tough for model builders. Okay, so Monday we'll do SUSY breaking finally. And on Tuesday we'll start extra dimensions, which is a completely new story, completely new solution for the hierarchy problem. Okay. And if you have any questions, as I said, I'm here.